What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 36 of Elo Punters. My name is Anurag Das, Bob Wong, and a special guest today, all the way from Europe, London. We have Sahar Merhadi here. Sahar, glad to have you here on the show. I am so excited. What's up? How's it going?
I am so good, guys. I'm so excited to be on. I just love the energy you guys have. And yeah, I can't wait to talk about legacy in Europe and the European Legacy Masters and sort of my story with legacy. Just kind of chat about legacy, really. It's going to be exciting.
All right. And we also have Bob here. Bob, hi.
Yo, yo. I'm very excited as well. Not quite as excited as you two, but I'll try to bring myself up to your level.
Yeah, I was literally just about to say the same thing. Like, I'm like 11 out of 10. It's 9 p.m. and Sahar is like a 12 out of 10. Meanwhile, Bob, you're just like,
hey, guys. How's it going?
Actually, I'll give you some credit. You're at like a 9 out of 10 compared to where you normally are. So I approve. We're ready, locked and loaded to continue on. But we do have some things that we need to go over first. So let's do that. Thank you to all our new patrons. We've got Mark, Trent, Julian, James, Yichao, Darth Dog, Zach, and Jack. Shout out to my boy David. If you want to support the podcast, it's Elo Punters on Patreon. Follow us at Elo Punters on Twitter as well. And you might be wondering, wow, what do we get for all of this? Well, obviously, you're supporting your favorite podcast, but also our wonderful, beautiful, handsome rapping editor at Force of Phil gets paid for his work. Because I mean, look, I know how I sound, and I wouldn't want to listen to myself for an hour. Phil makes us sound great, so that's pretty cool. Got some things that we want to talk about, because not only do we, you know, look into like magic and all the cool stuff there, but you know, I want to know more about you, Sahar. How are you doing? How are things going for you? Life, you got a lot of stuff coming up here. How are you handling it all?
I am handling it very well outside of legacy life. I am a PhD student looking at video games research, which is very exciting. I'm currently working on that as like a side thing. Well, side thing, that's like my main thing. And then, yeah, just been playing a lot of Legacy. I am now canonically known as the Moon Stompy Lady, playing a lot of Moon Stompy. I love that deck so much. And even though XJ Cloud has decided to divorce me to now go play Initiative Stompy, I'm going to still keep playing it because the deck's sweet. Yeah, outside of that, just been playing, just kind of getting excited about Magic because Magic's a great game. So I'm just like, let's go. But yeah, I'm all right other than that. It's quite warm in the UK still, even though it's been pissing it down with rain, and then it just goes really rainy, and then really warm, and then really rainy. And I'm like, I kind of want winter to arrive. Is that kind of a bad thing? She's kind of all right, really.
I'm going to tell you something that Bob told me once, maybe in confidence, but okay, I am just not a winter person. And I kind of get the feeling that even though Bob grew up, I don't know why I'm telling this story, but I'm just going to continue with this. Bob grew up like in the Northeast, right? And where it's really cold in the Northeast. I grew up in Texas. It is, and I've been to India before. It's like really, really hot, like the polar opposite, right? But Bob told me this one time when he was a kid growing up, he just like never told his parents that the heater in his room was broken.
Oh, no. So
he had like at the age of like 8 or 10 was just like huddling cold, shivering in a room. If I had to guess, Bob has like become one with the, like, I could see it go either way. I don't know why I'm still continuing with the story, but I just despise cold weather. So like I'm kind of on the polar opposite. Winter is cool, but I'm a spring kind of person. I don't know. That's just how I am. The seasons, I do get tired of seasons though. So like variety is nice. And it's one of the things that it's weird because I used to live in San Diego where the weather was always 70 degrees. And while that may sound amazing, you lose track of your body gets like desensitized to weather entirely, which is crazy to think about. Anyways, Bob, you're next. What are you doing with your life? How are you doing?
Well, I'm happy to say that I'm no longer as cold as I was as a child. I moved to Virginia, which is further south. And it's been a really mild, like, I guess it isn't really quite winter yet, but it's been a really mild November. Like, we still have, you know, temperatures in the 70s Fahrenheit. And even then, you know, when the temperature hits like 55 here, that's too cold for me. I have to pull out the space heater. So I'm definitely glad to be, you know, delaying winter for a little bit longer. So we'll see.
I'm on an American podcast. I have to translate Celsius to Fahrenheit. 60s? Yeah, I'm just like, it's 60s. Like late 60s, early 70s, right. I still get confused. I'm like, can I just say, if I say 17, that might freak out the Americans and be like, what does 17 mean? I'm like, fucked if I know. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't swear. Oops.
No, you can. It's totally fine. Yeah. I have so many international friends that I actually ran through this conundrum myself. All I remember is 10 equals 50 and then 7 times 1.8. Like, I don't know, like close to 14 or something. So you're right, like mid 60s. That's perfect. Yeah, 17 is like the actual exact number that we want. That's my shortcut. And Yeah, I agree. Disaster. Anyways, Fahrenheit is definitely better. The rest of the world is wrong. I live in the US. I cannot possibly talk about this. Let's see. I'm thinking about what I've been doing. I have been swamped with so much production work for a bunch of these events that I'm going to. So like this month there was Magic 30. This weekend there is the MTG Summit that I'll be traveling to. If people are listening to this and want to watch Constructed Magic, they've got 5Ks all weekend long that I'll be trying to stream. And then, most importantly, next week is DreamHack Atlanta, which I will be at, and I will be helping provide coverage for that event.
So exciting.
A lot of details there that, yeah, it's pretty exciting. A lot of details there that it's just like not worth going into, but there will be coverage. It will be good. It will be fun. And then what I personally am super, super, super hyped for, and it's crazy. Bob, actually, I don't even know if you're going to this event, but Eternal Weekend on the second week. Oh, you're not. Eternal Weekend in the second weekend of December. Yeah, the green light. I got the permission to do coverage for that event as well. It's unofficial, but I will have like my backpack stream set up there, and there will be coverage. I understand like the logistic complications for TOs to do it nowadays. And that's exactly why I'm here. We will get to watch the matches, and I'm so pumped for that.
I'm so jealous you're getting Eternal Weekend. I mean, the ELM is our Eternal Weekend. So that's the way I've been sort of PR stunting the lack of EU Eternal Weekend is that, oh, you just come to Italy. That's our Eternal Weekend and we're going to have a lovely time. But yeah, I'm so jealous. And it's in Philly and I love Philadelphia. I've got a soft spot for that city. You guys are going to have such a good time. Oh, I'm so jealous.
Eternal Weekend, especially like traveling for these big, like Eternal events. I just, you meet friends. The one time I went to Bologna was in 2019.
I was there.
I think that may have been, you were there. In fact, I remember like writing down on text. In fact, I'm pretty sure I could like look at my phone and pull up like my text coverage of you were 9-0. It was day one. You were playing Rug Delver, I think. And you got paired up against Tristan, who I think ended up as the finalist.
Yes.
And that was such a crazy, crazy match. And I think, and it was great. It was just fantastic.
So on many podcasts that I've been on recently, I've cited that match as the moment for me that I felt completely out of my depth. But looking back on it, it's like bittersweet gratefulness, if that kind of makes sense, of like seeing someone who is a progenitor of an archetype really work their craft. And I don't think you know this, Anurag, but that 9-0, I had been playing Legacy about 2 months. So for me, that
was
like, yeah, so it was mind-blowing that I even went 9-0 on that on day one. But yeah, it was such a weird thing. But playing Tristan was like, for me, a very humbling moment as a player. And I think one that has stuck with me in a positive way moving forward. And I think every Magic player competitively should have those matches in their like arsenal of like, I lost, I got schooled, but I learned a lot more about myself and a lot more about the game as a whole. But yeah, that was really fun. I missed GP Bologna.
I really do need to send you like what I have here, because I pulled up the notes from like 3 years ago. It's like round 10 featuring Sahar against Tristan. Turn one, Bug was on the play, Verdant Fetch, you went Tarn Valk Delver, they wastelanded, you attacked. The whole thing is here. I'll send this to you. This is great, because this is like, these are like memories that I feel like you lose when you don't have like coverage, which to me is part of the reason why I go out. I've spent this whole year traveling across the country, just like recording some of the biggest tournaments on the block here. And I'm glad that we will get to watch Eternal Weekend in some fashion or form. It's not going to be like the best coverage. It's not like, you know, I'm getting like $500,000 to like produce everything from the ground up, but something is better than nothing. You know, the memories they're so important. Bob, did you tell me you weren't going to be at Eternal Weekend this year?
Yeah, unfortunately, I was one of the people that they caught off guard, but they announced it a little bit too late. So I'm going to be on vacation on holiday in Italy. So can't complain too much, but a little bit bummed I can't go.
But you're going to be in Italy on the weekend of?
Yes.
Are you going to...
Bob, are you telling me something that we don't... Are you, Bob, are you going to be in Northern Italy on the same weekend as Eternal Weekend? I've turned into a detective now.
I'm going to be in Italy on the 8th, yes.
Oh, he's
missing. I'll be there that weekend.
Oh, no! He's missing the ELM weekend. I'm so sad.
I know. I looked at it afterwards and I was like, oh, yeah, it was a week off from this. But
that's
maybe
fine.
I'll still check out some of the stores.
Oh, you should. The Italians will love you, Bob. They'll take you in as one of their own. when you're there. That's not an issue.
That is an absolute understatement. I'm just going to say this right now, and I say this with a lot of love, but the Italians are absolutely crazy. They're like, I remember I went over to when I was in Bologna, right? Like, I met like Raphael Log T1 on Twitch.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Within 5 minutes, he was like, hey, you know, like if you've got a day off, why don't you come back with me and we'll go check out the rest of the country? And I was like, bro, we just met. How could you be this hospitable? You know what I mean? Like, whenever you go there, Bob, yeah, absolutely. You should hang out with a bunch of people. I think like Nicolo's there as well. Another person, yes, that like does a great job just hosting. And then I think what's more important is like, so like Magic is sweet, but I think like the players behind the game are way more incredible, and just getting to like hang out with them. And like, because like my favorite experience, one of my other favorite experiences is just like traveling. And I know we're like going on a tangent here, but this is cool, is when I went to Japan in 2018 and I met Kai Sawatari. And the thing I love about that experience the most is that he literally showed me around this, just like to all Tokyo, just like the cool places that like you would never get to see by googling attractions, right? Like he took me to this like mom and pop ramen shop that was like packed. The line was going around the corner, and I was like, I would have never known about this like amazing location, this incredible food, unless I was with someone who lived in the city and like knew everything. And so that's why, like, when you're there, like you take your girlfriend and just like, you know, explore all the cool things. I'm sure you've got stuff figured out, so I'm not going to take too much from that. But yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Bob, let me know what cities you're going to, and then I can connect you with people like Magic players in those cities. And then you can kind of get the local especial experience.
Definitely. I'll definitely do that. That sounds awesome.
Don't worry. I did the same when I went. Kai is also going to be at the ELM weekend because he's now moved to Berlin. So we're very excited to have Kai as well. I'm so excited about Magic, guys. Seriously, Anurag, to kind of give you big props, it is not unnoticed how much work you're doing, like even across the pond. British players are so fucking excited that you're like doing the grind, showing us coverage. Every time that I'm not doing anything on a weekend, I am putting one of the events that you're covering on my phone or on my computer while I'm doing something else. So let it not be like, I know you're working your bum off, but it is so, so important that it's done. And I'm so happy for you that you're doing it. This is my little hype lady moment for you.
Yeah, thank you.
You're doing God's work.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I know. I think we all have the same vision. I just a way to do it. And it's paid off. I've learned a lot through the way and made a lot of very cool connections. And even like you're mentioning, even just like watching the content, it helps me personally out so much, because that's how you just, you know, you monetize things based off of viewership. And so if you're listening at home and you like watching Paper Magic, I am not so subtly telling you to watch my next few events. Watch Eternal Weekend coverage, because it's going to be sweet. And I'm looking to have it, I don't know, it's been a long time since we've had Paper Eternal Weekend, so it's a big deal to me. But like you mentioned, we are excited about the Magic too, so why don't we dive into some of the Twitter questions that we saw, and then we'll transition that into some of the discussion points for today. So I think first question, in fact, Bob, I'll let you talk a lot because I feel like I hear my voice and that's always a problem. What are the Twitter questions we've got?
Here is a question from It's Julian. Europe recently saw a huge surge in non-LGS based tournament scenes. For example, he said at etc. in Germany, they've been seeing consistent turnouts that were, you know, last seen a decade ago. Why not will this happen in the U.S.? So I guess this one's for me and Anurag. I'm not sure. I mean, I think there have been a couple things, you know, that have like come up. Obviously, you know, we had the large SCG circuit and they've kind of toned it down somewhat, but they're still hosting tournaments. So I'm happy about that. I do think Grand Prix are going to come back at some point. And so that'll be kind of not just in the US, but all around the world. I'm hopeful that it's next year, but I don't know. I do know other TOs who have run tournament series, like for instance, Eternal Extravaganza, like they have kind of like sold their venue and downsized. So they're not able to run things anymore. So, I mean, we are still seeing some things, like NRG, for instance, is still running a tournament series, but I'm just like, I'm not sure that like the economics have been super favorable to the TOs. And then also, you know, when people do run tournaments, like the Legacy Pit, for instance, like a lot of people were complaining about, you know, the prize support, which I think was, you know, like you don't really understand how hard it is to become a TO and like the different costs that go into it. And I think, you know, people probably need to like reset their expectations and then, you know, be more welcoming to TOs when they do host these events. So I'm not sure. I mean, I'm hopeful that in the US we see another series start up, but I'm just not sure it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So I will chime in with information that I have gleaned over my year of traveling. The first is regarding Star City Games. I think when they introduced the SCG Con series earlier in the year. You know, it started off a little bit quiet in Dallas, like mid-June. There was a massive event that had like 900 players in the main event. It was absurd. And then after that, the numbers just like kind of tanked. I'll be very honest. Like, you know, Columbus had like maybe under 200 players for each of the 20K events. And then, you know, even after that, there was another event in Dallas again. Instead of 900 people, they had like 350 people in the main event. Baltimore had about 150 teams. Like, so you can see there's like a massive drop off. And to me, I'm concerned. I could not tell you why these things are happening, but like looking at the numbers, it does raise awareness, red flags for me. And it's really interesting to hear that for Julian and just like the whole Europe scene, for that to be resurging, quote unquote, they must be doing something right that we aren't. I don't know what it is, but I will allude to, maybe I'll talk about like other games, because I know in other games, like there's a lot of like that grassroots movement, like for Super Smash Brothers, for example, right? Like Nintendo doesn't, as far as I'm aware, they don't actually like officially sponsor any of the Smash tournaments that happen. So really it's like for the players, by players to a T. And like that includes like all the things you're thinking about, like venue costs, like all the TO logistics, internet, blah, 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 this, that, that. I don't know what it is, but like when you look at viewership for like those events on Twitch and like the support that people show, it's insane. It's honestly insane. Like this weekend, there was the Smash Summit for Melee that had 20,000 about average viewers, up to like 30K at some point. And that's more than like Magic the Gathering, like the Magic the Gathering Worlds event, which is like a $500,000 event compared to this like $50,000 event. It's just like how the communities approach the events, I think, is very interesting. I feel like maybe a large portion of like this, if I had to hazard a guess, is maybe like the general transition away from constructed Magic in the States towards Commander Magic and more casual gameplay. I'm not gonna say that like that's the thing, but like that is my first thought about like looking over the past year, how there's been a major migration towards that. So that's my first guess. Sahar, do you have any thoughts?
It's interesting. I think certainly in Europe, and I think again the ELM is moderately helping, it's not perfect. It's definitely not perfect. Each region is still kind of... This year is basically a rebuilding exercise for a lot of countries to get back into the swing of things. And legacy communities are still revitalized. Don't forget, the pandemic, a lot of legacy players left the format. Like, let's not forget about that for a second. And I think it is exacerbated in the States because it's so big. The NRG series is pocketed in, like, one part of the States. But if you're from Texas, that series ain't open to you. Same if you want to play in like LA and, you know, like the California section. There's like a whole thing there. I think the SCG kind of did that to a certain extent. But I think that until we get back GPs or something which is akin to a more, I say global, but like, you know, cross-country level, I think that's the challenge for the States, is that yes, you are having events and they are incredible and they are being run, but they're pocketed in places in the States where there is a strong community. There is a reason why, you know, the NRG series is in the Midwest, because that's where, you know, they found a pocket of Midwest players who are like, cool, we'll play, and it's fine. But I think I always forget just how big the States is, and I think Europeans also forget how big the States is, because it's like, I know, like, I was talking to Adam Wasburn Moses, Cincinnati native legacy player, and I said, how far do you drive for an event? He's like, 8 hours is fairly common. I'm like, 8 hours? I can go to Scotland in 8 hours. I'm not even traveling to an event in Scotland, like, on a weekend on a whim, because it's really far. Like, I'm, you know, it's, for me, it's more just Europe, we've kind of got our shit together, and that's in pockets of Europe where we've got our shit together. But I think it is still going to take time, and I'm with Bob, I think GPs are coming back. There needs to be an initiative from Wizards to push that forward. Whether that's with Legacy, I don't know, but even just for constructed formats, to bring that back, because I think the emphasis on the TO to do it, the TO isn't making money, so they have to do it out of the kindness of their own hearts, or trying to like re-galvanize the community, and that's the challenge. And I think there's places where that's going to work and there's some places where that isn't going to work. That's my sort of summary.
Yeah, I mean, there's another thing that I was thinking about too, and that's something that Bob mentioned, which is pretty smart, which is like recalibrating expectations as players.
Yeah.
I think one big difference between the Star City game circuit pre-pandemic and post-pandemic is the discontinuation of the Players' Championship. And what I've realized is that, just like what a lot of people have told me, is that without there being like a proper narrative, like, you know, heroes of these events, and I say that like in quotes, but, you know, or like champions and then like contenders. Overall, what I'm trying to say is that there's this like narrative that is just missing these events. So why would anyone bother getting invested in showing up to challenge the throne, to like tune in off streams and see how these players are progressing? And this to me is something that makes, like, you know, the ELM series very fascinating, because, you know, you have, and this is something you'll see a lot more in Europe, as far as I'm aware, is like Europe is a little bit more territorial. There's a lot more like, you know, just like pride in where you come from than like in the States, where like, I'm never like, oh, I'm from Texas and I'm so proud. Bob doesn't even know how to spell Massachusetts. Like, you know, that kind of thing, or whatever it is. I feel like that means that that adds like additional stakes to the sort of events where you're like, all right, look, I know like Sam is coming in, you know, he's going to rock the event with Infect, and he's from where I'm from. So like, I'm rooting for Sam. Let's put it. You get invested. That kind of narrative doesn't really exist as much. I do like that, you know, the NRG series has leaderboards and things like that. They're turning their show into a way to turn players from like, just like, you know, average Joes into personalities. Like a lot of people that I've seen on the circuit doing really well, you know, I they're very well received by the community. And so I feel like that lack of just like that sense of importance, narrative stake, incentive to like really commit to it like there was before, even like before when you had like GPs with like the point based system, right? Like you'd go to an event and it wasn't all or nothing. Like for example, like the current structure of like professional play, I think is still a little bit like Huey did a great job, but it's like all or nothing at these events. You have to like queue for an event, and then if you don't make the top 48 of this event, you don't go to the pro tour, which is like a little absurd to me, right? I think the pro tour should be like dedicate, like reward the dedication of players who are constantly playing Magic, much like it was before. I understand it's a little bit harder to implement that, and there are probably a lot of complications both financially and logistically with that, but it's just like one of the things that I'm thinking about in the back of my mind as to like what causes the numbers to go down. And I know Julian probably wasn't like expecting all of this, but I do think like that might be one of the big reasons why, like in the US at least, it's tough. It's a lot harder. And honestly, I'm really jealous now that I think about it, that, you know, the EU is popping off in terms of like all this, like, because like for me, like I think about Magic and sometimes I get nervous and scared about the future of Magic and like competitive play, and I get like grim thoughts, and I'm just like, I really love this game and I don't want it to go anywhere. But if we're seeing success in the EU, that means that there's a lot of stuff that we can maybe learn from that and just like apply it here to the States, so that we also get to experience that kind of surge in like the tournament scenes.
We can learn from both sides. I genuinely am a big proponent of this. We can learn from both sides of the pond, can look at each other and be like, what do you do that's cool? What do we do that's cool? And together we can kind of make this work. Like it's not perfect here either. Like we would love more events, but I think that let it not be, I think one thing that Legacy players in particular are very kind of have buckets of is passion and enthusiasm, and that kind of takes a lot of that forward. So I think whilst Europe is definitely seeing a huge surge, it can definitely, it's ever growing, and I think it certainly in the UK, I've definitely put a lot of effort along with others to just get new players, because it's also, you don't want the stagnation of just the same people playing. You want new, fresh blood, people coming into the format, trying it, remembering the first time they did the thing that their deck does. So I think it takes time. It's not an on-off switch. It's definitely going to take a bit of time to get back to the way things used to be, if they ever do get back to that level.
And it's funny too that you and Bob both think Grand Prix are coming back. I might be more of a pessimist. I think days of Grand Prix are long and gone, but I don't necessarily know if that means the competitive, it would really require like an incentive, because I like, logistically speaking, I'll tell you something, Grand Prix were nightmares, like you mentioned, right? Like for Wizards and like even the TOs, it's just like a huge money sink. The people loved it, but I don't know, the Hasbro sales are insanely, this Hasbro's doing really well right now, and or at least with regards to like Magic and things like that, and they don't have Grand Prix, and so if Grand Prix are a net negative, what incentive do they have to bring it back? And I could go down this rabbit hole, and maybe someone, if you're listening to this and you want to like give me your thoughts on it, you know, feel free to tweet at Elo Punters to like, you know, give some thoughts on what you think about that specifically. But I don't know, that's just like the cynic in me. We should look at another question though. Do you have any other thoughts about this before we move on, Bob or Sahar?
Quickly, I think Huey, who's in, you know, part of Play MTG now, like he mentioned that, you know, paper play is the future of competitive Magic on Magic. So I think that was, you know, kind of people reading into that tweet that, oh, there's going to be another series that's coming back. And I think it's going to be more substantive than like, you know, the RC to or RCQ to RC to PT.
You're right.
So that's what people are thinking. GPs make sense to me. So we'll see. I mean, it could. You know, potentially not be next year. It could be later. So we'll see.
Do you remember the event in that they announced? They announced a future event coming up in Feb. They announced the date. I don't know if they did. But the date, it was like the Philadelphia event.
Yeah. The effectively is the Philadelphia Pro Tour.
Is that the Pro Tour?
I thought it was the Pro Tour, wasn't it?
So from my understanding, the Pro Tour was going to be in like Charlotte or something. And then this event was more of that like GP styled event. I think it's more of like an MTG con, but instead of like an SCG con, it's like a proper like BioWizards MTG con where.
Yeah.
So I don't know if either of you went to Magic 30. I know Bob didn't. Sahar, did you get to go?
No, it was so expensive to fly out to Vegas. I think there were a few Brits there. There were definitely.
Yeah, I saw
Brits.
Will.
Living his best life.
Shout out to Will. Yeah, Will was, he like carried me through that weekend. I think I would have literally collapsed at some point. I'm going to just point blank say that have we talked about M30 yet? Or is this our first podcast episode?
Nope.
Yeah, okay. I'm just going to briefly go on about this. M30 was sweet. Okay, there were a couple logistical issues there, but it wasn't Wizards. It wasn't the fault of the judges. I'm going to point the finger at Reed Pop, but you know, whatever. That's separate issue. I will also say really quickly, I despise Las Vegas. I would like to never go there again. The place that I was staying at like just smelled like smoke and ash the whole time. But I loved seeing everybody. And I have to say, inside the venue hall, oh my God, they had so many cool things that I had just never really thought was capable for Wizards to do. Like the figures, the cosplay artists, like all the art, like everything that was going on there was pretty nice. The constructed portion, honestly, it was like maybe the weaker side of things, but it was nice that they were also doing that. And then they also had like worlds going on in the background as well. So that was, there's a lot of stuff there that like to decompress and think about, but that's my 411 there. And I think if those style events are the future of like, or the Grand Prix equivalent or whatever, it'd be pretty sweet. That's what I thought Philadelphia was going to be like. Another one of these like M30s, but maybe a little bit smaller because you don't have worlds and things like that. And I think if Wizards goes in that direction, well, goddamn, I am so excited because that M30 was like the nuts.
I just hope they don't just have it though as American-centric and they do one in Europe, in Asia, and they spread it out, because my only fear with something like those events is that, because obviously Wizards of the Coast is an American company, you just they're always in the States and we don't get that experience. So I would love that, you know, if they could do like a Magic 30 or con equivalent in say London, which makes probably the most sense, that'd be incredible. It would sell out so quickly, it'd be unbelievable. Same in like Japan. I think go to where your markets are. Like, this is just, you know, marketing 101, but I hope if that is the future that they do it globally and it's not just, oh, our American customers get this only, or you have to fly out here to get it because it's really expensive. But that's my only real take on Magic 30. I kind of turned off a little bit from it because it was just so much. There was so much of my Twitter on it, and I was like, I'm checking out.
Yeah.
Because there was so much going on, for sure. Another question, I saw one, to just do this a little bit, is from Newton, because this is more to me, and I'm going to answer it very quickly. Sahar, has any skill or skills developed through NTG translated well to your PhD research or vice versa? If you follow me on Twitter, like I said, Magic player by day, PhD person by day. Yes, I definitely have had skills translated from MTG moved into my research and vice versa. I'm very fascinated as a researcher by two things. outside of my main research topic. One is the player psychology around Magic players and the way they view the game and the idea around tilt and the grind and how player motivation sort of comes around that from like a games researcher. And then the second thing, which is a little bit more akin, I think, to obviously passions that we all share, is what I've called competitive gameplay integrity. So the role of open deck lists and open data, and who do you share the data with? When do you get that data? How do you get that data? The role of research to, you know, if we could say build a model of the best deck or the best way to draft, that's good as a sort of pursuit of knowledge. But if you give that to a player, that's like a massive competitive advantage. So it's been super interesting trying to look at Magic, not only as a player, but also as a researcher, and go, there's some very cool things here. And you will not be surprised that there are quite a few MTG players who are also academics. There is a non-zero sum of us, and we're all doing very good work out there, whether it's in sort of games research or just wider sort of computer science, social sciences, and things like that. So that's my sort of response to Newton, that yes, it's very fascinating. I love the game. I love TCGs generally, and I'm finding it fascinating for both player motivation and competitive gameplay integrity, because I think it's quite important if we're going to have a good competitive experience, that it's the role of getting that content and making sure that the experience is good for all players is done to the highest level effectively. So yeah, that's my two cents on that question.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's super cool that your PhD actually like coincides with Magic. How is your progress on that going?
It's going, is my current phrase. So I've just did a survey to over 250 players looking at, my main topic is looking at gaming during times of personal difficulty, which is quite pertinent to the world we're in right now. I just did a survey of about 250 people, and about 130 odd of those are actually usable. So I've just spent my days just coding and analyzing glacially, because no one tells you when you do research that it takes time, and then you're like, oh god, I've done like 2 hours of work and already I'm so knackered and I need to take a break, and I need to go back to it and then take a break. But it's going well. I'm enjoying it, but it's results will be shown in due course. But yeah, it's interesting that I can talk about Magic as my job, as my job effectively, or at least my research, and kind of go, cool, there's some interesting things that I should tell you, and I'll be telling people a lot more about it in the months to come, certainly. So yeah, you know, follow me on Twitter for hot takes on that, as well as my hot takes on Magic.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's actually really cool. I think that's a really, really awesome perspective. Let's transition to the meat and potatoes. I know we're like 30, 40 minutes into this podcast episode, but like, I think it's just like one of those things where I'm getting sucked into the conversation, and it's great. That's always a good sign. But we have two big topics to talk about today. And Sahar, I'm going to let you do the heavy lifting here. Bob, why don't you introduce the first topic?
Yeah, so our first topic is the European Legacy Masters. It's kind of a super interesting series where I think a lot of the players kind of that are well known around Europe were invited to this tournament, and it's going to kind of be a showdown among kind of the top European legacy players. I think there were also some countries that might have had some qualification tournaments, and the idea is for this to become, you know, all based on a tournament series starting next year. But this year being the first year, they kind of wanted to, you know, invite some well-known names and shed some like good publicity. So Sahar, is that more or less?
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, so it is indeed. I think the way I normally describe it is that it's an invitation only event where the best legacy players are from across the continent face off to determine the European legacy champion. And our vision as the European Legacy Project is very much around qualification and sort of the dream of, as you were kind of talking about earlier, in terms of giving that narrative that's missing and having, you know, the eternal glory, or to use another podcast name, to get that eternal glory of just being the best Legacy player in Europe. It's, yeah, it's just a really cool series. And I think we definitely wanted to reinvigorate local scenes, reinvigorate marquee events by just offering players a new sort of end game. They play in their local events, they qualify, and then they come to this like invitational event and they face off the best of the best. And if they win, they win some prizes, but they also win bragging rights, which I think most Legacy players actually care about. I think for us, the reason why we kind of started it is that the Italians, funnily enough, unsurprising no one, the Italians have been doing this for years. And we were like, we can definitely expand this across Europe. And we did, and we got a lot of amazing responses. And I think we've now got 20 countries on board. And it's just incredible the amount of passion and enthusiasm that players have. And yes, Bob, you're correct in that we did invite some players. I think notable invites, I would say, are Andrea Mengucci and Javier Dominguez, because of course Andrea Mengucci and Javier Dominguez are coming. But also we wanted to give back, so we invited the full cast of Everyday Eternal, so Julia Nab, Callum Smith and Kai Sawatari, as a way of, you know, doing good community work. And we also decided to invite previous GP winners and Eternal Weekend players. So we've invited Marc-Eric Voigt, who won GP Bologna in 2019. And my personal favourite, Gary Campbell, the King of Scotland, is coming, who won GP Birmingham in 2018. So I am so excited by just the kind of the who's who's of Legacy players, but coupled with players who just went to a Legacy event, played their best, and qualified, and got to play. And I think for me, that's the coolest story. And the narrative of, like, you know, who do you kind of go for? You know, what countries are doing well? But also, if someone just randomly comes in and just wins the whole event, kind of out of nowhere, then they got the bragging rights of, I won the very first European Legacy Masters. And then the long-term vision is that, yes, there will be a qualification series akin to an organized play structure where there will be local events that go into potential national events, which then go into the final sort of championship, as it were.
That was a really good explanation. And I have some questions already, because from my perspective, you know, I think things like from like a consumer consumption angle, and so I'm just gonna ask some like really heavy hitting questions. I hope I wish I had like written these down before so I could give you some time, because I think they're pretty heavy. But my first question is, all right, let's say like this process, it does sound very familiar to me, and I was thinking, like, as you were mentioning this, like, where have I heard this before, right? And it seems like it's very similar to the return to the Pro Tour schematic that, you know, Huey created, which means that, that's insane. I would read this as insanely high praise, because if you're doing the same thing as, like, you know, what Wizards is saying is like the move to make, you know, going forward with Huey at the front seat, that means your vision is definitely there, and that it is something desirable both by, you know, the people who are playing the game, but then even like you as organizers for the thing like that. So my question though is like, what is unique about this specifically, like the ELM, compared to maybe, let's say, what Wiz might be doing with other formats, or like, you know, things like that, right? Like, what is your draw to just the rest of Europe, I guess?
So I think we have to take those as two slightly separate questions, because if Wizards come back and do, you know, do give back for constructed formats, they have been, you know, there's not been a lot of opportunities for players to prove themselves on a kind of international level in Legacy. Like, Legacy has kind of been put, with peace and love to the format, it has sort of been put out to pasture. And we genuinely believe that for Legacy to have a real future, it's kind of up for the communities to build that future, rather than just wait for Wizards to come and give it to us on a silver platter and let's go. So we were like, okay, well, if they're not doing it, we'll do it. And that's sort of the main draw that I think a load of players, you know, if you're playing all formats and you're doing that, then great. This is just another opportunity to qualify and do, you know, have the glory of, you know, being Legacy champion. But for Legacy players, because a lot of the times that it becomes like their main format or the only format that they play, and if they want that competitive edge and that competitive draw, there isn't really a way to do it outside of like maybe like national level, like, you know, some countries have their kind of nationals, as it were, or like the Belgian Legacy Cup, for example, if I shout out Tom De Decker. But we felt that we had to take it to the next level. And if once you come back and say, you know, there's going to be legacy events every single, you know, once a quarter, amazing. That's an addition to that. But I am skeptical, like you said, with GPs, that I think that is coming back. The closest I think we might get is what we used to have in the old GP days, where legacy was maybe an event, maybe two in a year. That's not enough. So if people are serious about playing legacy and they want to prove themselves, I think this is the way that we showcase ourselves as a way of being not being an alternative, because legacy is now a community format. And I obviously have opinions about the format panel and things like that, but that's all on Twitter. You guys can talk about that later. But for us, it was, we're enthusiastic about it. We're disappointed by the lack of opportunities. There is to play legacy at a high level. We're going to do it ourselves. This year's a proof of concept to see if it actually works, and there is an appetite for it. And I think there genuinely is. And next year, we can learn from the lessons from this year and then take it to the next level, which, I mean, personally, the committee have some big plans. I personally am an ex-sales lady of 12 years. I've got some very big plans of where I would like to see this project go. But we need to obviously prove that there's an appetite, which is kind of why I've been talking to you guys and, you know, promoting it on Twitter and, you know, singing its praises, because I genuinely care.
So are you like the mastermind behind this, or who would you say like came up with this idea?
I am but one. I'm not even the mastermind. I'm just a doer. So for me, in terms of the mastermind, Niccolo Cavoni and Samuele Dejani were probably the two main progenitors of this. Tom De Decker, who's one of the Belgian reps, was probably another one. And then a bunch of reps kind of came into it. Sam Dams was involved in the initial conversations. I was involved in initial conversations, because it literally came about at one of the Four Seasons events we were at in June, that why don't we just expand the current invitational series that the Italians have and see how that goes. And then after getting more countries on board and telling people about it, and now we've got it to the level that it is. We didn't expect it to be as big as it is now. I am so proud of the community to getting on side with us, because they're passionate about the format and they want to lift their scene to a higher level. And let's not forget, none of us, similar to some, you know, other places, we're not making money from this. This is purely done out of love. So much love for this. So I think that's, for us, is the kind of important thing. But definitely, I think Niccolo Cavoni, Samuele Dejani, Tom De Decker were sort of the initial conversations and spearheads of the program. And I think they've been reps brought in. And then myself, for me, as soon as that, you know, it was coming to be actualized in the sort of living organism that this event now is and this series will become, you need doers. Like with anything that you're doing, you need the people who kind of get stuff done. And that's kind of how I've always been. So I was like, how can I help? This is where we are today, effectively.
Yeah, that's awesome and really, really cool to hear.
Thank you.
Yeah, I am going to be honest with you. I empathize with a lot of these struggles, because it sounds like you're coming from exactly the same place as I am in terms of just like a sheer appreciation and a magnanimous love for the game, which is, you know, it's great. We just need more people like you, you know? Right? I think this is also alluding back to what I was talking about, like when I was talking about like the Smash community, right? Like how they don't have proper sponsorship by their, you know, parent company or whatever, and they just do it themselves. They're just like, all right, screw this, we need you, we can do it ourselves. And they have made a phenomenal product. You know, they have incredible metrics, viewership, prize payout, support, that kind of thing in a lot of stages, but there's still some room for improvement. But you know, it's great to see that their community is showing up. And like I this is a hard ask, but you know, I really would hope that the Magic community, especially the Legacy community, does show up as well. Because at the end of the day, you're right. You know, when it comes push to shove and Wizards has to pick formats to support, you know, they've clearly got an agenda for Pioneer. Modern is maybe the most, you know, popular constructed format just in the States, at least. I don't know how that reflects in Europe. But Legacy definitely, yeah, Legacy definitely is like a little bit left behind. And you know, if we all love Legacy, we just have to fucking do it ourselves. I'll just say it like that, right? And so I would love to see us all come together and this sort of thing. And that this is the second sort of consumption question that I have is, is it going to be streamed?
Yes, it is going to be streamed. It is going to be streamed. There is coverage. Actually, I just was on a call with the with both Tom and Niccolo about potential streaming. There is going to be, it is going to be streamed. I will send the links. It will be in the show notes. Twitch.tv/4seasons tournaments. I'm going to make sure that I have the actual. The actual thing, yeah, 4 seasons tournaments. I'll put them in the show notes. It'll be both live coverage starting, so it starts at 11 a.m. so it's a little bit early for the States, but it'll be on, I think it's gonna be a 6-7 round event, so you'll see it throughout the day. And we will also do text coverage, so similar to what we do with Frank Carsten, there will be text coverage, live coverage. We will have potentially player interviews. We're just in the process of seeing if we can logistically do player interviews. We were doing player interviews on the day as well, so like live events of like, you know, hello, take Julian for example, how are you doing, stuff like that. And then some pre-recorded content potentially, but again, the final push of the event is getting coverage to the best it can be, and the guys are on it. I will be around because I'm always going to be around, but yeah, it's going to be streamed. There's going to be coverage because that's the future as well. We completely respect the work that you're doing, Anorak, and I think we wanted to replicate that, and I'm hoping that the legacy community shows up. They will see the good work that we are doing, because it's going to be an amazing event. I cannot stress this enough. I'm so excited for it, that it's just going to be incredible. I'm so excited.
I'm so jealous hearing this, and I'm just trying to like brainstorm here, like, could we do something similar in the US? And I think like the one key is like, it seems like you are able to find like, you know, stores willing to like, you know, work with you guys, at least especially for next year when you're going to be doing, you know, events in every single country, potentially. Like that definitely seems like it's going to be a big challenge. And I'm just trying to figure out if we could do something like that here. And it just definitely seems like it's going to be a lot of work logistically. And
it is.
And that's why it's so great to have people like you.
Yeah. And I think for us, we have, so we, you know, 2023 is in the back of all of our minds and we have ideas. I think every country has ideas. I think there is going to be a conversation after the event about what it is to be a rep and the sort of, not code of conduct, but sort of go, if you want to be involved in this project, this is what you have, this is kind of what you're signing up for. And the reps for us certainly are the eyes and ears on the ground. They are the ones with the connections, they are the ones with knowing, you know, who is who. And some people have, like, you know, in the case of Austria, for a tiny country, they are probably one of the most active communities in Europe outside of like the big, you know, Italy, Spain, France, and the UK. Tiny country, they have constantly 30 to 50 plus, you know, legacy events. They have weekly F&Ms for legacy. And I'm like, that's incredible. I'm so excited for you guys. And even in the UK, I am not one person. I'm not doing this by myself. I have me and my beautiful friend Luke Kay working together on this. And we basically got a group of players and TOs together. And we're like, you guys are our eyes and ears across the country. Tell us what you want. How is this going to work? How can we get this to rejuvenate the, you know, our respective region to be the best it can be and to sort of showcase its fullest potential? So much so that we seem to have the most people from Britain has the biggest showing at the ELM, let's put it that way. I don't know how that happened, don't at me. It sort of magically happened that we have the most players, but it is what it is. And I think it is interesting, other smaller countries coming in. Like, I didn't know, for example, Bulgaria had an active community. They do, but I only found out from the ELM, and it's just nice tapping into communities who want to see the format thrive. And that's the coolest thing. And I think, can it be done in the States? Probably. Do you guys need a lot of people to be on side and to make it work? Probably. But I have been quite open with the committee about expanding it. I mean, not right now, because the event is in just under a month. But in the future, I would love to expand it. I would, of course, love to expand it, but I need to get it working first and as a working product before I can get more and more people on board and sort of make it into sort of this grand thing. Because if you want to make it massive, you need sponsors. And whilst we have got sponsors for this event, it is very much a work in progress kind of, we will sponsor your vision. But if I wanted to be as big as I think it can be, you need sponsors and people who have sold into your vision from the bottom up, from your local to your regional, local to your national to your European wide events. And I'm not saying I'm trying to replicate like Wizards organized play on a tiny scale. I am on a very tiny scale, but it takes time. And I think this first event is very much a proof of concept to everyone, the committee included. I'm not beating about the bush. We just want to see how well it can do. And I think we're just so surprised by the amount of positive reactions we've had, because I thought there's a couple of us who thought that Legacy might have died. I for one at one point thought Legacy had died, and then I went to Italy and I was like, no, Legacy is very much alive and kicking. You just need to look for it.
Yeah, that is something that I have personally struggled with too a lot, is just that the whole monetization aspect. I could show you my expenses, but honestly, you drop your jaw when you saw how, like, what the upkeep cost is to do all of this for a year. So, you know, you're definitely on the right path. And I'll say, like, if you do find success in that sort of, you know, area or field, please let me know, because I would love to learn from you what you did correctly. I think my ventures into that world have been pretty dicey, but
It's like I said, the first event is just a proof. Like I said, this first event is very much just to see if it works. We got it together. It's been probably about 5-6 months of preparation and getting what the idea and the vision is going to look like. And that's kind of why, you know, for us, the long-term goal is that everyone qualifies. But as Bob mentioned at the start when you were introducing me, we needed to get names in so people would watch, to see the who's who's. And I am not kidding. It is a smorgasbord of who's who. There is GP winners, Eternal Weekend winners, Mengucci. Did I mention Mengucci? And it's just, I'm just, wow. It's, the Americans can do that too, because my God, you guys have a lot of good Legacy players. I'm talking to two right now who are very good. And yeah, it's just great. I think that's the thing that I want listeners who love Legacy, just watch it. I think you'll be quietly surprised, just A, by the production value, hope, fingers crossed, and just the level of play that you will see. You're not getting, and also the diversity, something that I definitely feel when you look at European events compared to American events is the diversity of decks that get played. It is, I look at, say, the NRG series when I look at Legacy, and it is very much like, oh, the top eight is 7 Delver decks and 1 Depths deck, or 7 Delver decks and a Doomsday deck. And I'm like, you only have to look at the top eights of the events that we've run for the qualifiers to see that there is a, you know, Delver still is there, and Bob, your deck is still great. But, you know, like, just for the UK events alone, I think, you know, we had Painter, we had Lands, we had, you know, there's a bunch of different types of events that a bunch of decks that are being played and that will be showcased. I think if you want to see the richness of the format, this event, I'm hoping players will bring that, because if nothing else, they're there to play for glory. And some of them will try to spike the event and just play Delver because it's great. But the majority will play the deck that they love to play, because that's how, weirdly, the European Legacy players, I feel, have kind of, whether I say they made different, but I genuinely do think some of them are made a bit different. They will play the decks they want to play. So you'll see everything from four color Leyline Binding, Minsk and Boo, you know, I call it Anorak Special, all the way from Naya Stompy to Initiative Stompy to Doomsday to Cephalid Breakfast. And that's just stuff from that I know. We will have a breakdown of the decks, like a metagame breakdown on the day when we do coverage. And then the players will have open deck lists for the top eight, so they can be like, oh, what is happening? I think the final, well, not final thing, but like the main thing I keep telling players is we have a narrative. There are people you can cheer. The reason why we did the countries is it's to have a little bit of nationalism, but also it's a good way for coverage to be like, all of the UK players have, you know, are currently X and, you know, are sort of 4-1 across their rounds or whatever, or like, you know, Spain is doing really well and things like that. So it's just going to be great. Like, I as a player, I'm excited. As an organizer, I'm even more excited.
Yeah, I definitely like the country aspect too. Like, you know, sporting events like the Olympics and World Cup are so much fun. And it is like a nice kind of low-key fun way to root for your country. So I'm definitely in for that. But yeah, I'm super excited for this event as well. Like you mentioned, it's happening in early December. So I will definitely be trying to tune in, even if I'm in Europe. And I guess the time works better for me since I guess that'll be the week before I'm in Europe, but I will still be tuning in. Yeah.
It is the 3rd of December, 11 a.m. Central European time. So it's going to be a little bit early for the US. It's going to be great. And yeah, so I will, you know, the guys will share the things, but there is a Twitter. We have a Twitter, so we'll all be shared and things like that. So I'm excited. I'm excited that you guys are excited. I think the whole vision is just, I just want to see Legacy thrive. And I think, talking with you guys and like the work that Anurag you're doing, I think you guys are the same. We just want to see our format live and be kicking, you know, even with Leyline Binding. I still find that whole Leyline Binding thing quite funny, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'm not like too concerned about it, but I mean, I think you tackled a couple things that are interesting, and you know, we're definitely trying to grow the game. So I did kind of want to cover, you know, in the time we have left, talk a little bit more about kind of representation and, you know, what it means to be kind of a woman playing Legacy. Like, it's honestly not that common, and I really wish it were more common. But yeah, tell us about your experience.
Thank you, Bob. So listeners at home, if you don't know what I look like, I am a heritage-wise, my parents are Iranian, and I was born in the UK, so I am very much a beige lady playing the game. And it's tough sometimes when you walk into a room and no one looks like you. And I mean, obviously, Bob and Anurag, I don't know if you've ever had this experience yourself, but like when it is a very kind of, you know, cis, you know, it's just like every guy's a white guy and you're like, oh my God, what is happening? And I actually played Modern first before I came into Legacy. And so I, you know, the competitive grinder mindset, I was doing that as well. And thank goodness now that players are a lot better, but there's definitely moments where I think Dawn Delozier wrote an article about this a few months ago of her experiences playing the game and noticing that I would say 95% of the player base is actually super lovely and actually super chilled, but there is definitely a few percentage points where I sit down to play a game and I'm, you know, quite chatty and I'm, you know, doing my thing, and I can see in my opponent's eyes they think they've already won because I am a woman. And that to me is such a my guy, with all the love in the world, who the feck do you think you are? And I think that now that there are more female Legacy players, heck, there are now just more female players, and I think with the advancement of the VML, Carolyn Kavanagh and Hayu are doing amazing work on that initiative. And I think for me as a woman of color, there's an added challenge to that as well, because I've got to deal with the fact that not only am I my ethnically different to everyone else, but I'm also, you know, gender different. And I think genuinely I was thinking about this the other day when I was talking with Tashiv and Bat of all people. I think it's me, Arya Karam Chandani, and Noor Singh are the only women of color who play competitive Magic, and that's it. And I was like, wow, that's not a lot of women of color playing the game, and it should be more. 100% should be more. But for me, the way I look at it now is that it's just, if I can just be one person kind of showcasing that the game is it is at least trying to be inclusive, and I am doing my part to increase inclusivity, then it's going to take time. But if people are sort of showcasing that, yes, you can still play Legacy and it doesn't matter what you look like or how, you know, what you sound like or anything like that, then that's, you know, I've done my part effectively in that respect. But yeah, it's tough, Bob. I'm not going to lie to you. It definitely was tough.
And I think, you know, you're right. Like, people like you is exactly who we need, because we need people who, maybe there are people who are interested in playing Legacy, but they're like, well, I guess it doesn't really look like it's for me if it's all these cis white dudes. But like, you know, once we do have that representation, and if people, you know, start doing well, like, you know, Melissa DeToro and Autumn Burchett, like, these are definitely people that have kind of become household names, you know, through the tournament series. So we definitely just need kind of more of you to like push the game, be active on Twitter. Like, that's another way to be seen. So I definitely think it's just, you know, being seen goes a long way.
Yeah. And I think it's the thing for me is just, I think Legacy, it's a little bit harder than some of the other formats, 100%, because it's It's not, it is a community, to the untrained eye, it looks like a community format. So when you're trying to do your hot takes, as it were, you might not get as accepted. But I think that I have enough allies now, both in my local community, but also I think on Twitter now, that, you know, if I say something, then it, you know, should have some legs. Like, one of my kind of opinions in terms of representation, you know, I remember when I think Anurag mentioned about the legacy format panel, and, you know, kind of this whole conversation was being had, and my two sentences on it was like, there is a very strong difference in having a format panel that is just deck specialists and people who are actually custodians of the format. A good player does not make you a custodian of the format. They are two very different things. And it's the same in representation. If you want the game to be inclusive, your best players can do that, but you also just need people who will just speak up and be like, getting out there, doing the thing I need to do, and I'm getting results while I'm doing it. So it is definitely a balancing act. But there, thank goodness, there are some amazing female players that are coming out. You know, Jessie Brodkin, Sam Murphy, Dawn Delosier, Autumn Burchett still plays Legacy. Myself, you know, there are female players that are coming out, and even ones that aren't playing competitively, they're just playing at home with their friends and just enjoying playing Paper Magic. I'm someone who will just keep waving the good flag, and then until they tell me to not do, or until, you know, Twitter blows up on its own, on itself, and I'm like, oh, okay, I have to find somewhere else to go and talk about it. I'm a natural extrovert, so when I came to the game, it was very difficult to be like, oh, these people aren't like me, but that's kind of good, because I don't want everyone to be like me. I think Anurag might have the same experience. Just like, you walk in, you go, oh, this is just all nerdy Magic players, and here's me just waving around like a headless chicken. My favorite phrase when I go play events is, have you seen that small beige lady who's very loud and can be heard in most places? I'm like, yes, that's me. Hello. Waving furiously, which is all good. But yeah, representation is, we've got a long way to go, but I think Legacy is getting better slowly but surely. And I have told Four Seasons for coverage that if there are female players who are playing, not necessarily for the ELM, I don't know if any female players have qualified, but certainly for the rest of the Four Seasons events that are also running throughout that weekend, that if there are female or marginalized gender, not just female, but marginalized gender players, put them on coverage, talk about it, because it's an amazing thing to showcase in the game.
I agree with you. I think, especially like Bob, you and I, like with the amount of influence that we have on the community and things like that, it's also on us to do exactly that as well. So Sahar, thank you for, you know, just doing what you do, because it's incredible. And then also, you know, by talking about this all now, like, you know, I know I am accountable and I need to help out where I can. Bob knows the same thing. And that's fantastic, honestly, because I don't want to play in an environment where like people have felt the way that you've described. I don't want to play in an environment where people have, you know, I share some of those thoughts with you too. You know, you just walk into a room full of white dudes and you're just like, well, I don't really, I've seen, but not the way, you know, that I would like to be seen. You know what I mean? That,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's tough. And I think I don't really get very sentimental very often, but I really do appreciate like everything that you're doing. It's incredible.
Thank you, Anurag. That's so sweet.
No, thank you. Thank you. I will keep singing
from the hilltops until they tell me of it. And I'm very fortunate, and I have to say this, I am very, very fortunate that the Legacy community is very welcoming. My God, they're so welcoming. Like, even the pair of you, just like talking to you, Bob, I've talked to Bob about Delver many a time, and I think as well, people go, oh, I can't talk to these people on Twitter, and it's like, well, of course you can, they're just people, just talk to them. I've made my best relationships with people, like with Magic players on Twitter, by just saying, hey, can you tell me about your thing? And Magic players love to chat, so I think it's all good. So I think let's just be the beacons that we are, and we'll have a lovely time. And I'm not gonna shut up about it. So until they tell me to, I'm gonna keep telling about Moon Stompy until I get bored of Moon Stompy. We're gonna have a lovely time. So yeah, it should be good. Any other questions you have for me, guys?
No, actually, I think we covered all the major topics. I think you did an incredible job both introducing and explaining the European Legacy Master Series, also providing just like very, very informative points as to why this series is not only just like important and the future of Legacy in Europe, but just also like kind of like the vision of how it could be something fantastic that we need to have, that we need to have. Absolutely. And then also, like, you know, everything you mentioned about representation is just spot on. You know, I can definitely tell that you've gone through a lot and you're doing your best, and it's on us, Bob. I'm dead ass serious, Bob. It's on you and me now to do as much, you know, to help out, because the more people on it, the better. And then, you know, just if we can, like, you know, prop up these voices that are saying very, 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 very important things, I'm all for it. So honestly, just we should be doing more. That really is what it is. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode then. Sahar, thank you so much for joining us. We have this is an incredible episode. I think maybe one of the most fun episodes I've had in a long time, Bob. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, if people want to reach out to you, where can they find you?
So Sahar Mahadi on Twitter is where I'm mostly at. Just talking about Legacy, or I'm talking about my research. Yeah, just come find me, come say hello, come and just ask me questions. And that's usually the main place I live. And then I'm on Discord and other things, but I can share those kind of more privately. I was thinking about streaming, and I used to stream a little while ago, but PhD plus trying to do all this ELM stuff, it's like, when do I have time to make content anymore? But soon. I have some plans for it, but yeah, for the time being, just find me on Twitter. I will share with the guys the ELM. So for the ELM, it's EU Legacy Masters, not to be confused with the TO Legacy European Tour, just to make that very clear. We were pissed off as anybody that the name of our TO for the RC series is called Legacy, because, you know, why not? So it's EU Legacy. Trust me, the amount of players that got really pissed off about that was quite a few. So yeah, it's EU Legacy Masters, and our website's there, but I look after the Twitter there as well, so come say hello on there too. Again, we're kind of sharing a load of stuff that we're doing. I've just posted all the prizes. So we've got some amazing exclusive playmats, we've got some really cool goodies that we're giving out, and some amazing sponsors who are kind of with us on this vision. So very excited about what to bring.
Nice. Super awesome. All right, well, we're going to wrap this episode up. Everybody, you already know the drill here. My Anurag Das, Bob Wong, Sahar Mahadi here. At Elo Punchers, if you have thoughts about this episode, tweet. Let me know. I will personally respond to you. And we can also laugh about Bob. By the way, no, I'm kidding. I love Bob. that being said, that's going to be it for this episode. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back with more content later. Check us out. Bye.
Bye.